Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Stephen St. John and Nate Bucati with the Drake, Jason Justice, and also Shane Summers and No-No the intern. Nate is in Frisco, Texas, covering the Big 12 Media Days, and Sam Mellinger now joins us from the Kansas City Star doing the same thing. Well, hopefully not doing the same thing as Nate, especially after that last commercial break, but that's fine. Sam Mellinger joins us. Hello, Sam. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, man? Timeout. Timeout. Wow. This is first snafu of the let's try this.
Operator
one.
Error.
Steven?
Hey, how are you?
There we are. What's up, buddy?
Thought maybe Gary Lezak shut your mic off or something so he could talk some more.
Drake even told me.
What more is there to be said?
As he gave me this equipment on Friday, that input number two does not work. It's a software glitch on the piece of equipment that we have. So what did I do? I came down here and I plugged Sam Mellinger into input two. Shame on me, Drake.
What's going on next year, by the way?
Well, we've got Tim Fitzgerald sitting next to me right now, just hanging out.
Is there like another show going on?
Working really hard.
Is there another show? Is there another show going on or what?
There's a show from Oklahoma City going on, and it's one of those, you know, madcap morning shows, from what I can tell.
Wait a minute, aren't we a madcap? Aren't we a madcap morning show?
I thought we were, but I don't feel like we're bringing the energy these guys are next to us.
What are they talking about? Can you hear? Like, what's the?
I mean, they were making fun of Bob Bowlsby earlier, which you know.
That's easy.
Par.
Hey, look, there's some fish in the barrel. Let's go over there. Sam Mellinger, let's talk about. We'll get into where you guys are in a little bit, but let's talk about the Kansas City Royals, because they lost five in a row going back to the sweep against the at the hands of the Dodgers. Then yesterday, they are the benefit of a sun ball and end up winning that game. But despite losing five of the last six, they find themselves still only two games out of the wild card and two games out of the Central because the Indians got swept by the Oakland A's. What the hell is going on, Sam Mellinger?
It is almost as if baseball is unpredictable.
Yeah, thank you.
Hey, what's up, Fitzy?
All right. You're welcome.
Sam, thanks for joining us.
I do think.
Talk to you next week.
here's one point that I want to make, though, and I would be saying this even if Shin-Soo Choo caught that ball and the Royals lost in 10 innings or whatever, is I hear a lot of people talking about this Royals team is no good. Even if they are lucky enough to sneak into the playoffs, they'll lose the wild card game, they'll get swept in the division series or whatever. And of all the places in the country, in North America, for people to be making that argument, Kansas City seems like a very bizarre spot. It is almost as if people can't remember a team 3 years ago that was below 500 in July, that everybody thought was garbage, that everybody wanted the GM and the manager fired, snuck into the playoffs with a wild card game, and then went on to the World Series. It is absolutely stunning to me that people don't seem to remember this.
Now, to give you an example, so we started the show talking about this, and how, look, I'm enthusiastic because the Royals are only two games out despite going through a tough stretch. And we talked about the Indians and the real problems of the Indians, considering Trevor Bauer couldn't get out of the first inning yesterday and has a 5.59 ERA. And Josh Tomlin goes tonight, and in 17 starts, he has a 5.90 ERA. So they have two awful starting pitchers in the rotation. That's a problem, and that's one of the reasons why Cleveland is being held back. But we talked about that, and so one listener named Eric said, if Royals win Central, doesn't make me feel better. Astros, Yankees, Red Sox, can they compete in the playoffs? Penn better get better. And so I just tweeted back out, hey, I'd be happy if they won the Central because anything can happen in the playoffs, and you can't win it unless you're in it. And so then KC Royal T tweets in, if they can't win it, they should just sell. And I'm like, are we really going to turn our noses up at the possibility of winning the division? Is that how fat and happy we are? Is that where we are as a Royals fan base? Well, you know what? That's not going to really do me much good if they win a division. I have to be able to be confident they can win the whole damn thing. I'm with you, Sam. I don't get that. I guess I was a Royals fan for long enough for my whole life and started watching Royals baseball in freaking 1976. I've seen how fleeting these opportunities are in Kansas City, and if you're telling me the Royals have a chance to win the division, let's go, and then we'll find out what happens in the playoffs. Let's do this thing. I don't get the negativity there.
Yeah, there's a couple things. Like I think for one, and I know I say this a lot, but it's very easy when you follow one team, it's very easy to forget that all boats have holes, you know, that, that there are no perfect teams. And if we were doing a show in Cleveland, like think about what we'd be talking about with the Indians. If we were doing a show,
sucks.
Yes, exactly. And I mean, think about this. Like, and look, like I agree. If you're going to say that that the Indians, that the Yankees and the Astros are better than the Royals, sure, I agree. But I think it's also true that the Royals are 4-3 against the Astros so far this season. So like, I just don't know. Like this. They cannot advance even if they're lucky enough to get there. I don't know where that comes from. And again, like, just think about, like, if whoever said that, if the 2014 version of that person, like, heard that person say that, what would happen? There would be a fist fight.
Yeah, right? I mean, we're talking about an organization with 30 years without postseason baseball. Right. I mean, we're already spoiled on postseason baseball. Yeah. Just like, I get it. As you guys know, I get frustrated with, like, Jake and I argue about, how critical he is of the Chiefs right now. And I'm like, they went 12-4 and got us to the playoffs. Like, after the Todd Haley era, I'm disappointed that the team doesn't have a Hall of Fame quarterback that I think can really win the Super Bowl. But I really appreciate watching meaningful football into December and January. That matters to me. That, as a fan, that makes my experience as a fan so much better. Even though, yeah, it's really frustrating to lose in the playoffs to Ben Roethlisberger and Tom Brady every time, it's still like that matters to me. That makes the entire football season so much more fun. And the idea of like a pennant race, which I know is a misnomer now that there isn't just a pennant winner, but a playoff race through August and into September. We got to experience how much more fun that is the last couple of years. We're really going to just give up on that?
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, but it could be a long time again before this happens after this year. And I know people say, well, if they just sell now, then that'll restart the rebuilding process so much quicker. It might, but it also, the Cubs paid a heavy price to get Quintana, right? But part of the reason they paid that heavy price is because they get to control Quintana for, what, two more years after this? The Royals' chips that they have to trade outside of Kelvin Herrera are all Rena players. The odds are they're not going to get, even if they decided to sell, they're not going to get the same type of price that Quintana just fetched for the Chicago Cubs. If the Royals wanted that type of price, they needed to sell those players last year, which there was no way in hell they were going to do coming off of a World Series championship. So they're in a different spot here. And, I mean, we're all on the same page. We're all preaching to the choir here. But it and I think the vast majority of Royals fans are excited right now and want to see this team do well. But we hear from the people that are on that side of, they should sell. But it blows my mind that you would turn your nose up at the possibility of a division, you know, of another playoff appearance.
Well, yeah, and I do think that it's logically true that, if they go for it and they end up finishing 82-80 or, 85 and however many that would be, and miss the playoffs, that's the worst scenario because you don't get to cash in on these prospects. But I've always thought, like, the whole purpose of trading your good players at the deadline for young prospects is to someday have a shot at the playoffs, which you have right now. And just because it's not guaranteed, that means you're not supposed to trade. So, and it would, I mean, it absolutely would, I believe, make the rebuild, make getting back to, perhaps another parade or another postseason appearance a little bit harder and maybe a little bit longer. But how's that not worth it?
It's totally
to just try? You got to try. You got to go for it. If they are two games out, three games out, and they trade Eric Hosmer and Mike Moustakas and Lorenzo Cain, that would be the easiest column that I'll ever write. That would be the easiest show you guys ever do. Who does that?
Well, I they're not going to do that. They're going to add, if anything, and we don't know if Cleveland is going to do anything to try to add to their team. As I've mentioned, their rotation, or at least two parts of the rotation, is a big problem. Jason Kipnis is out for 3, 4, or 5 weeks, we'll see, with his hamstring issue. And so they're vulnerable. They've been vulnerable, and for the people that have been waiting for them to explode and run away with this division, it's clearly that's not going to happen. We're in mid-July right now, and it's a three-team race. And also, I'll say this, for people that have been waiting for the Minnesota Twins to implode and for them to trade Irvin Santana and for them to move on, Hell, maybe that's not going to happen. I don't know. But the point is, right now, we're in the middle of a three-team race, and the Royals have a shot. So let's go from there. The Royals' starting pitching was pretty darn good over the weekend. Jason Hamill had a no-hitter through five. He hit a wall. We've seen that before in the sixth inning, but he still pitched well enough to where the Royals could have and should have won that game. Danny Duffy was terrific, only gives up one run. Royals lose 1-0. And then Ian Kennedy was very solid. We'll take that from Ian Kennedy every time out. So again, even though they lost 2 out of 3, one of the biggest reasons for optimism for me is the front four of that rotation. And if that's what we're going to get from those three guys, if that's indicative of what we'll see moving on, and then Jason Vargas, I'll take that. And then you add some type of veteran starting pitcher to solidify everything. That rotation is good enough to win the division. Your thoughts, Sam Mellinger?
Yeah, cosign. And I also think that, and maybe this is a dumb thing to say, I realize that the Royals are last in the American League in runs scored, but I believe the offense is going to get a little bit better too. I think they're going to be better over the second half of the season than they were in the first half. So I think that, you know, you're not going to be in a situation where, you know, you got to win 3-2. You know, that if somebody hits a three-run homer in the third inning, you've got to spend the rest of the game, you know, trying to make that stand up. So, yeah, I mean, there is a clear path for the Royals to get into the postseason. And, you know, if you are in a different city, if you're in Cleveland or you're in Minnesota, or yeah, I just feel like you're kind of looking and you're like, oh, those guys again. You know, they're going to come on in the second half. That's what they always do. You know, Kelvin Herrera hasn't had the best year. But you know what about Kelvin Herrera, too, if we talk about the bullpen for a second, is if you isolate his numbers on in save situations, they're basically the last three seasons of his career where he's been dominant. His numbers are completely inflated by times that he's come in up 8, down 8, whatever, and he gives it up. You know, in save situations, he's been pretty damn good. So, you know, and I do believe that they need another reliever or two, which is weird when you talk about the team of Davis, Holland, and Herrera. But, yeah, I mean, they can make a small move to up their chances by, you know, 5%, 10%, but that's a big deal.
Did the Royals make a mistake by trading away Wade Davis?
Well, yes. Like, I have a philosophical difference. We talked about this of how the Royals are approaching it. My thing, go all in for 2017. You're not good enough. You don't have enough money. You're not a franchise that can rebuild on the fly. So my
rebuild
thing,
while going for it at the same time.
Yes, yeah. Yes, absolutely. So yes, but like in the context, I completely understand the trade. They get a young power hitter with some ceiling who they control for three more years after a total of four, mm-hmm. three more years after this year for a guy who's, you know, people can say what they want, and he's had a great year, but whose elbow may blow out at any point, and who you know is going to be a free agent, and you save, what was it, $7 million, I think, on payroll. So I understand the reasons, but yes, I do think it was a mistake, just the philosophy that they're doing.
How worried are you about Joaquin Soria?
Yeah, I'm getting there. I am getting there, and I've been, like, more pro Joaquin Soria than I think a lot of people, but you know, that's something they got to manage too. They got to find the right reliever, and that's been Ned's whole thing is, you know, match them up. Just match them up. Take them day by day. Match them up. And they got to do that.
I'm taking a selfie with me, Sam, and Big J right now.
Also, I would like to let people know that the sound you're hearing in the background is a very loud morning show that is broadcasting next to Nate down in Texas. Also, that is the... that is the siren. That is the I am on full Soria alert, as I said earlier. That is the Soria sounder. Wait,
just to be sure,
siren.
That's coming from Kansas
yeah,
City, right?
That's coming from Kansas Sam City. Sam and I both thought that's. We thought that was coming from inside the stadium.
It's Steven, are you safe?
Everywhere. That is when Soria comes to the game now. This is what's playing in my mind and in my heart.
It used to be Welcome to the Jungle.
No, this is it. This is to let everyone know that the game could quickly be tied. How many more times do we have to see? And look, I get it. He's pitched better and everything else, but his ERA is still 3.55, which is not great for a setup guy. He blew the lead in L.A. that horrible Saturday night. And then yesterday, he could have been the GOAT. He blew the lead again. How many times do we have to see that before they try something else? Because they are, again, they are competing for a playoff spot. It is the second half, and they are two games out, so the margin for error is small. So let's go deeper into this. So if you're concerned about Soria, what do you do?
Well, so his job description dictates that every time he gives it up, it's going to be in a big situation. And I think he had gone about 2 weeks before, was it last week? He had gone 2 weeks without giving anything up in any game he pitched. And now he's done it twice in a row. And I think the issue with him is that I think that some of this is mental, which is a weird thing to say about a guy who's been in the big leagues as long as he has and a guy who's had the success that he has. But I think he's getting a little rattled. I think that mentally he's getting a little shook right now. And if I'm right about that, and Ned Yost, his greatest strength, I think, as a manager is knowing when his guys are rattled, when his guys feel hot, all that stuff. And if I'm right about that and Soria's rattled, then they need to get him the heck out of the eighth inning and you know, start pitching the sixth or seventh or whatever and just, again, match him up and just try and get through it. But they can't have – if Joaquin Soria is less than 100% confident, they can't have him in those situations.
And look, and that's another reason why the Royals are not only – it looks like they are, and you tweeted this out after we had the discussion last Monday, and I want to get into that. And I told you that, look, the Royals, they need to trade for a starting pitcher and need to trade for at least one more bullpen arm.
Yeah.
And you tweeted out that you just tell me what you tweet. You think it's going to happen. It's not imminent, but they're at least looking around. I think it's going to happen because I don't think it takes a whole lot to upgrade that fifth spot. We talked about that. But I do think, especially yesterday, the Nationals did not give a whole lot up for Ryan Madsen and Sean Doolittle. And you wonder, well, what the hell does that mean for the Royals? Because I think that based on what I've read and all the people, all the talking heads, the market right now is flooded with bullpen arms that are available. And considering the Nationals didn't pay a huge price for two good bullpen arms, I think that bodes well for the Royals being able to acquire another reliever and not having to give up a whole lot. What do you think now about the Royals' chances of making a move? I think that helped them yesterday, what the Nationals gave up for Doolittle and Madsen.
Yeah, I think, you know, executives, they always talk about, like, setting the price. And if that price has been set, you know, for relievers, and I agree with you, it's relatively low, then, yeah, I do think that the Royals can do something. But I want to be clear about something. Like, I don't want to predict that the Royals are absolutely going to make a trade, but I know – beyond a shadow of a doubt that they are searching and want to make a trade for at least one starter and at least one reliever, and maybe two. They are absolutely in the market, making phone calls, being active that way. They have let every seller know that they are in the market and willing to trade some prospects for some veteran, you know, for just some help down the stretch. Whether that translates into a deal, I think is hard to predict, but I do agree with your read on the Nationals trade that, you know, it's an achievable price.
And I thought that was good news for the Royals. And, I would have taken either one of those guys. We've already seen Ryan Madsen succeed here with the Royals and Doolittle when he's healthy. I mean, just look at his whip and his strikeout to walk as a left-hander of the bullpen. That would have been terrific. And so hopefully now the Royals, that will improve their chances of acquiring a bullpen arm. And there's still plenty of starting pitchers, I think, within their price range and the price tag as far as the return, I think that they would be able to land. So I'm excited about what the Royals will do between now and July 31st. Let's take a break. Nate Bucati and Sam Mellinger live in Texas. Back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Stephen St. John and Nate Bucati and Sam Mellinger. Nate and Sam are down in Frisco, Texas, covering Big 12 Media Days. The Royals win yesterday 4-3 over the Texas Rangers, avoiding the sweep. Now two games out of the wild card, two games out of first place, and starting a four-game series with the Detroit Tigers tonight at Kauffman Stadium should be an interesting series, because Detroit right now up in the air about whether or not they are going to sell at the deadline. Heck, they're only six games out of first place, but most people feel like they're going to at least trade a couple of pieces. Justin Verlander's name is out there, although that seems impossible because of his price tag. But Justin Wilson, their closer now, is attracting a lot of trade attention. So we'll see what happens with the Detroit Tigers. Before we move on and talk about where you guys are, Sam, your thoughts about this upcoming four-game series at Kauffman Stadium against the Detroit Tigers. Jason Vargas on the mound tonight, taking on Jordan Zimmermann, sporting a 5.87 ERA. You got to love the pitching matchup, Vargas over Zimmermann tonight at Kauffman Stadium.
Yeah, I think the Royals have, is it 12 games left against the Tigers? Something. It's a lot. And I believe that the Tigers are a team that's going to fade and kind of die out the rest of the year. I think that's an old group who is used to winning. And I think groups like that, when they're out of it, can fade very quickly. And I don't know if the Royals are maybe in retrospect, if they, you know, if they split or, you know, lose three or four or whatever in the series, maybe it's the hindsight is, you know, one last gasp from, you know, from the old team. But I think that the Royals, the later you play the Tigers this year, the better off you're going to be, because I think their focus is going to wane a little bit, and I think that they are to be had.
All right, fellas, you're down at Big 12 Media Day. Sam, your thoughts on Kansas and Kansas State. I know that we'll have Kansas State tomorrow feature, but Kansas is one of the teams that's going to be on full display. Give us your thoughts and maybe expectations heading in to Big 12 Media Day for Kansas and Kansas State.
Yeah, so you know what's weird is I feel like this is a year where there are at least a sliver of expectations for Kansas. And I don't mean a bowl game or anything like that, but I do believe that this is a year where they need to win a little bit. And, you know, the first few years with David Beatty, I think everybody rightly understood, you know, the dumpster fire that he was taking over, and everybody's going to be patient. But I don't think people are going to be patient if they go 2-10 again, you know. I think some of their boosters have made it clear that they better make progress in the standings this year or else. And I just think that's an interesting dynamic for Kansas football that, I mean, first of all, it's weird that three or four wins or whatever would be like tangible progress, but that's where we are right now. And, you know, by all accounts, I think they should be able to do it. They've got, you know, good players. The recruiting is improving, all that. They've got some real momentum, but it's different, I guess, from my point of view anyway, that there's some actual, I don't know about pressure, but there's, you know, yeah. The expectations. They got to move.
So four wins would be the most in a season for KU since the Mark Mangino era. I mean, think about that. Like, the year that he got fired, he got pushed out the door. I think they won five games. And remember, they were a last-second field goal by Missouri away from actually winning six and going to a bowl game. But they have not won four games in a season since then.
That was 2009.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I was looking at stuff coming down here yesterday, and my the older I get, the shorter life seems, you know. So I'm like, right, it wasn't that long ago that Kansas was in it. Well, actually, it was that long ago. Yeah. My kids weren't even alive when Kansas went to back-to-back bowl games. So it's been horrible. Now it's been a decently long time that it's been horrible. And I don't think that David Beatty, like, you almost don't think about how horrible the first 2 years of his regime have been, because nobody thinks it's his fault that it's been that horrible. But they won two games in his first 2 years total combined. Mm-hmm. Between the 2 years, they've won two games. So his first 2 years have been just as horrible as the Charlie Weiss and Turner Gill eras from a production standpoint. Mm-hmm. Again, nobody thinks it's his fault. Mm-hmm. But so that's three coaches, that's 6 years of some of the worst football in the entire country, hands down. So yeah, four wins would be a huge improvement. Mm-hmm. And when I look at the schedule, they've got to take advantage of the first half of the season. Mm-hmm. They need to be ready to play early on, because they open up against Southeast Missouri State. They better win that game, right? That's the layup. Then they play at home against Central Michigan. Then they play at an Ohio team that beat them fairly soundly in Lawrence last year. So that's going to be a tough game for KU, but it's also going to be a measuring stick as to how much better they really are. Then when you talk about non-conference games that could be winnable, they have at home against West Virginia, which has to replace a lot of their defense. They have at home against Texas Tech, which has been a middling team, you know, and then they have at Iowa State. Those three games, to me, like those six games to start the year, they need to win three of those, maybe four of those, if they want to have a four-win season this year. To me, like, the start of the season is going to be imperative for the University of Kansas.
Yeah, I mean, finishing up at TCU, K-State, Baylor, at Texas, Oklahoma, at OSU, That's rough. The Central Michigan game is really interesting to me too. But, you know, it's a home game, and Central Michigan is a school that they won six games last year. It's a school that, you know, is usually in that area, right? Mm-hmm. Once in a while though, they'll
pros
bump
on
up,
their team,
yep,
you know?
To 9 or 10. But you're at home. That to me is sort of the biggest measuring stick game. You're right. If they lose that opener. You know, like, I don't know what we're talking about here. But that Central Michigan game, if you can win that, I think you've I know they got Texas last year, but, you know, you can show that you've won a game against a legitimate opponent at home. And then the at Ohio game, I think, is a little bit more, you know, maybe some pressure's off or whatever. But, yeah, I mean, I think early on you got – the other thing, too, about college, you know, college sports, I think more than anything is about confidence. And if you can get three or four of those first games, maybe you can steal TCU. Maybe you can steal, you know, something else down the road. You never know. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, it could go bad very quickly, or it could go good.
What about Kansas State? What's their ceiling? What's their upside this year? Because I think they're on their way to having a hell of a year.
I think K-State can win the Big 12. I'm not saying that they will. I think they were picked third. Is that right? In the preseason poll?
I don't remember what the
media
picked.
I think Oklahoma and Oklahoma State were 1 and 2, and I think K-State was third.
But Sam, this is just maybe oversimplifying things, but I just kind of feel like, you know, with Bob Stoops leaving, this thing's on. Let's go.
Yes, you know? Absolutely. Yeah, and you know, look, we all know about what Bill Snyder has typically done with a returning quarterback, and I just think they have a lot of good players, and I think that K-State, this is cliche by now for sure, but you know, K-State is always a little bit overlooked, and I would not be surprised at all if they go into the last weekend of the season with a chance to win the league. I absolutely believe that this is a golden opportunity for them.
They have a returning quarterback that rushed for 1,000 yards and threw for 1,500 last year, one of only a few quarterbacks in the league that did that. They've got most of their offense back, which puts them in a good position. Now, they've got to replace one of the best pass rushers in the Big 12 from last year. And, you know, Elijah Lee leaving to go pro early from the linebacker spot, I think, is something that's going to be difficult for them. But we've seen enough out of K-State and Bill Snyder that it seems like they've always got somebody to plug in situations like that. I'm just going to be very interested to see how Bill Snyder's situation affects this team.
Yep.
Does this team rally around Bill Snyder and what could be his final days as the K-State legendary coach? Does this weird little power struggle thing about who's going to be his replacement become an issue for the team? How much does Bill Snyder have physically after everything that he's been through battling cancer for the past year at his age? My guess would be that the team's going to rally around him, and that Bill Snyder will always be able to have enough to give his team. If he's out there coaching, they're going to be a Bill Snyder coach team. But it is a different dynamic than what we've seen before with him, and I'm just going to be very interested. To me, that's the biggest question for them going into the season.
Yeah, and how often is Bill Snyder part of the biggest question,
right,
you know, for K-State? But I was thinking about this on the flight down here last night, actually, about one of the things I'm most interested in is just how he looks tomorrow, just like physically how he looks. And I remember at the spring game, I don't know if you remember this, but, you know, he was on the sideline in the first half and then went up to the box for the second half with the air conditioning and all that, which I totally get. It was hot. It was hot for me, and I'm in my 30s. But, you know, I don't know the last time that I really was looking forward, you know what I mean, like curious about what a coach looked like physically, but I am. And for obvious reasons, the guy's gone under, you know, cancer treatments, and I literally can only imagine how much that takes out of a man, fortunately. But it's different. It's different this year of you know, just the energy. That's been part of the rise of K-State is Bill Snyder's just relentless, stubborn work ethic and every little detail. And is he able to do that still? I think he would be able to, but, you know, Father Time is undefeated, and this man has gone under cancer treatment.
We've got Sam Mellinger live from Texas with Nate Bucati at Big 12 Media Day. Back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. We're hoping to get several guests in the next hour down at Big 12 Media Day. featuring Kansas today as far as the local schools. Kansas State will be tomorrow, but hopefully we'll get David Beatty and Dorrance Armstrong and whoever else is made available down there from some of the other schools. Sam Mellinger, I mentioned, you know, Bob Stoops gone from Oklahoma. Lincoln Riley takes over. He's considered a rising star in the coaching ranks, but he's not Bob Stoops. Maybe he will be someday, but he certainly isn't now. But most people feel like, hey, this thing's up and running. He's stepping into an excellent situation. It's hard to screw this thing up. So I ask you, I mean, what do you think is the floor here for Lincoln Riley? He still is a first-year head coach. He's surrounded by talent. He's been there. It will be hard to screw this thing up. But do you think at least this year, and we won't know for 4 or 5 years the real impact if he doesn't keep up the level of recruiting and everything else, but this year, could this make an impact on Oklahoma's team going from Bob Stoops to Lincoln Riley?
I think so, right? I mean, I think that Bob Stoops is one of the great coaches of the last 20 years in college football. And I think just to assume that you can plug and play an assistant into that spot and you're absolutely not going to lose anything, I don't believe that at all. I don't know Lincoln Riley. I think it's crazy that the head coach at Oklahoma is 33 years old. Like, that blows my mind.
Yeah.
But absolutely, I think, you know, look, they're not going to implode this year, right? You know, they'll win games, they'll go to a bowl and all that. But, you know, if they were going to be, 10-2 or 11-1 or something like that with Stoops, I don't think it's beyond the realm of possibility that they'll win 7 or 8 games with Lincoln Riley.
Did you vote for the predicted order of finish?
I did not.
Will you right now?
Do you want me to?
Yes.
Let's do it. All right, Oklahoma State 1.
Wow.
I'm going to say K-State 2. Oklahoma 3.
It gets really messy after that.
It does, doesn't it?
Well, I like that so far. I mean,
yeah. I mean, I'm here to say things you like.
Well,
how about West Virginia 4? Texas 5, TCU 6, Texas Tech 7,
come on,
Baylor 8,
mm-hmm, come on,
Iowa State 9,
oh,
who's left?
Kansas.
Oh, okay, 10.
No possibility that you have to think twice about putting Kansas ahead of anyone?
I think they're locked in.
No.
But look, I think they could, like we just talked about. I think it's possible. They have a lot of momentum. This is, and I don't mean this as the joke that some people are going to take it as, but you know, this is probably the best roster that they've had in many, many years, right? I don't think anybody should be shocked if they finish, you know, 8th or 9th in the Big 12. But I don't know how you can pick that.
It's just, they,
you know,
they're
I just don't know how you can pick that.
Yeah, they're starting from such a low spot.
Sure.
I mean, Jake, I know, has disagreed with me on this, but almost every other person I talk to that's paid attention to it would agree that, like, what Charlie Weiss did to the program was far worse than what Turner Gill did to the program.
I agree with that.
So what David Beatty inherited was not just the last place team; it was a Division I AA roster,
uh-huh,
and that's really an insult to Division I AA teams.
Uh-huh.
I mean, he inherited 60 scholarship players, and half of those guys probably couldn't have gotten scholarships at the other schools in the Big 12, and so this might be the first year for David Beatty just going to battle with an actual full, I don't even know if he's at full scholarship capacity. He might, because he couldn't do it because you can only have so many kids in each recruiting class. So he has to stagger the classes to, you know, I'll have to ask that when I see him if they're up to full scholarship capacity.
Yeah.
You know?
Just reminded me of something when he took over and he had the 60 scholarship players. I looked this up and I'm going to get it wrong by one or two, I think, but out of those 60, I think it was 35 of those 60 players, Kansas was the only Division I scholarship offer. You know, so I mean, that's what they're playing with.
We love the fact, we had Keith Loniker Jr. on our show last week because when his dad passed away, and he's a great story, and he had 15 tackles or whatever against Texas. He was at Baker,
right? Yep.
Baker, which is, I believe, NAIA Division II. like, I know they're, I don't remember if they're one or division one or two. And Baker, hey, they went to the national championship game, but it's NAIA.
Right.
And he's starting at the University of Kansas, and God love him. He busts his butt and he works hard. It's not, I don't mean that in any disrespect to him whatsoever. I admire him, but
the fact that that opening's there.
Many teams in the Big 12 have a kid that was at one point at an NAIA school, not just on the roster, mm-hmm. but starting for mm-hmm. them? And that's where KU's been. So they could improve. They could double their win total and still far and away be the last place team in the Big 12. I mean, that's just where they're at. I mean, that's how far David Beatty has to go to try to get things in the right direction.
Yeah, I know you're making a point, but I don't think far and away. If they win four games, then they're probably, you know, maybe tied for ninth or in ninth or whatever. I'm just saying, like, look, like, I don't think KU, they're not just going to get blowed out every week. They're not going to lose every game by 40 or whatever. Right. I mean, I think they have a legitimate chance to win two conference games.
Yeah, I mean, if they win four games, that probably means they've won one or two games in the league.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I think that's possible. I don't know how any sane person could pick them anything other than 10th.
Right. It's like someone picking KU basketball to win anything other than first.
Exactly.
How can you do it?
Exactly. The best line I've ever heard is that the Big 12 is Kansas and nine other schools in both sports.
Wow.
Sam Mellinger has been our guest. Sam, thank you very much for the time. We appreciate it.
I always enjoy it, man. Thanks.
Do you always enjoy it, really?
Every single time.
I hope that's true. That's a very nice.
Are you gonna have Lezak back?
No. I think if you ask Drake, Nate has taken control of the Lezak and things too. Just now, we'll take a break. Back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB.